hallways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes. Live from the Forbidden Book Group Studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necronomapod with your host, Mike Soffler, Mike Moncada, episode 129, Tim Powers Declare. The story of a man, and another man, and a woman, and a genie, and Dr. Bellows, and Major Healy, and Cocoa Beach, and nobody loved him. And now, Necronomapod!
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Okay. All right, book two.
Book two.
Tim Powers, Declare. I could tell already that you did not like reading this book.
It was hard to read.
I agree. This was not an easy book to read or listen to.
It was not fun.
It was fun for me, but at a certain point, I stopped caring about what was going to happen.
I think that's more the point.
Yeah, which I don't think is something an author wants to happen.
You're just like, can we just get to it?
Yeah.
And then when we did get to the climax, it was like, I had to go back and go like, did the climax happen? Oh, that was the climax? Oh.
Well, okay. I think part of what was happening here, did you read his long afterword?
Yes.
I
skimmed it.
Yeah, well, he goes on about trying to write... to shoehorn basically this fantastic story into the established facts of history.
Yeah.
Of which there are many.
There are many established facts in history. That is not even debatable.
That is not even debatable. But his trick is to cram this story about genies and such into the biography of a person who I'd never heard of before.
I had never heard of him.
Apparently, he was a big deal.
Apparently,
Kim Philby.
Yeah, apparently, if he ended up in Moscow.
Yeah, I mean, he's
defected.
I read a little bit about him on the Wikipedia page, and there's a picture of him. I mean, of his tombstone, which has a picture of him on it.
Oh,
just outside of Red Square.
And is it a picture of him on it, and he's holding his tombstone, and there's a picture on it
yes.
of him holding his tombstone?
It is completely mise en abîme. No, it's not.
Go get your degree.
No, but he looks like
Mr. Smarty Pants.
I think I didn't see this movie, but I saw pictures of it. The Gary Oldman remake of
Secret Taylor Soldier
yeah,
Spy.
Yeah, Secret Taylor Soldier Spy.
Yeah.
And he looks just like him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just like him. So he's sort of like the prototype of the MI5 British spy,
right?
Before James Bond sort of took that territory for himself.
Well, so that's what this novel tries to do is take a spy novel,
yeah,
and smooze in some supernatural,
yeah,
and intrigue,
mm-hmm.
And I like a good spy novel. I do. I can read spy novels, and I like them.
Yeah, it's funny. I have no experience with them.
Yeah, and I like those kind of thrillers. They're a good kind of beach read or whatever.
Yeah.
But this thing was so crammed with characters and people and more people and things happening. There were just so many things happening. All the time.
So many things.
And plus on your back, you're also jumping through time back and forth.
Yes.
And it is like incredible. And it doesn't end.
It goes on and on.
Even when it was ended, there was an epilogue that didn't end.
Yeah, the epilogue had to be about 40, 50 pages long.
And there were like explanations of like, that were just coming out of nowhere, like to like make things happen, like, oh, these spheres have to look like this. And they spheres are now how the deaths of the Nephilim, that is the materialization of their death. And then that sphere, I mean, there was like an actual, like, sitting at this table, somebody explaining everything.
I know.
Just so he could get the... everything was rolling.
There was some, there were some moments of what we call, a hand waving. There was parts of this thing where the hand waving was so frenetic that you think it was going to take flight.
Should we do the plot at least just quickly?
Can we? Is it possible? So,
I'm up to the challenge. There's this guy, Anthony Hale.
Yes.
Right? It is Anthony, right? Not Andrew.
Andrew Hale.
Andrew Hale. As a young boy, he and his mother, he is taken to this building and he meets this guy, Theodoro.
Mm-hmm.
And he's asked about his dreams.
Yes.
And basically this kid ends up being turned into a spy.
Yes.
He grows up, becomes a spy during the German occupation of France.
Yes.
World War II. And he meets this woman, and there's all this la-di-da, and there's all this stuff happening, the war. And he's gone undercover. He's really a double agent.
Yeah.
Because he appears to be on the side of Moscow.
Yes.
But he's really with the Brits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's happening. But there's also these kind of strange supernatural things happening.
Mm-hmm.
That he witnesses, and now I don't remember really what the first one was.
Well, the first one
was with the cart, with the boat, with all the dead bodies in it.
Yeah, it's at the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin.
He's given this ankh.
Yes.
And somehow he knows what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Brandenburg Gate, there's this thing appears that is like a elemental but huge.
Yes.
And it's kind of walking through, eating people.
Yep, eating people.
And he somehow is able to direct this thing and get it to stop.
Yes.
He says some clever sentences. Mm-hmm. He quotes a poem. And he holds this ankh up in the air.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was just sort of, I don't know how it is anchors, but it like anchors this elemental.
The ankh and anchor. There's some play going on there. Yeah.
Right. To do something and stop doing whatever it's doing.
Right.
Right. Ah, so somehow then he gets brought into this group called Declare.
Yes.
Right? And Declare is... there's this whole thing with Russia going to Mount...
Ararat.
Where traditionally they thought the Ark... Noah's Ark is there somewhere.
Had washed up, yep.
And... so somebody from... so Russia is involved in being there, taking this certain stone, mm-hmm. and trying to take that stone and put it in near the Brandenburg Gates, right?
Yes.
To keep this elemental, to sort of give this elemental a boundary,
mm-hmm.
on which it's territory. And this elemental is actually a djinn. Not the drinking kind, but a genie.
Mm-hmm.
And the djinns are basically Nephilim. They're not even really Nephilim. They're the fallen angels.
Yes.
Who are now inside of a plant. And then a whole bunch
a thistle.
A thistle. And a whole bunch of other things. That when the bees... take the thistle flower pollen and turn it into honey. It's just endless. So many connections. There's this pool of like tar in the desert where this djinn mm-hmm. appears, and somehow Anthony Hale is able to like control it.
Mm-hmm.
It recognizes him as some sort of emissary,
uh-huh.
right? So basically, what they're trying to make happen mm-hmm. is the Russians are trying to forge an alliance with these fallen angels, these djinn.
Yes.
So that they can basically, you know, a world monopoly.
Yes.
And this thing that appeared at the Brandenburg's gates is called the Stepmother of Russia. It's basically one of these djinn, mm-hmm. and it is sort of protects Russia.
Yeah.
And so what the Project Declare is trying to do is to kill off these beings.
Kill off Russia's guard.
Kill off the
beings, but specifically Russia's guardian
angel. Guardian angel, but also the rest of the beings.
Yes.
That are in colonies in this petrified vessel that's on Mount Ararat, right. which people think is a Noah's Ark, but it's really... not Noah's Ark.
It was hitched to Noah's Ark.
It's Hone's Ark. Or yes. It's like hitched to the Ark. That comes out of nowhere, right? Yep. So there's Hale, and then there's this Philby, and they're half brothers
yes.
who are consecrated to the djinn as emissaries.
Yep.
But unfortunately, and so now the djinn think they're one person. That split into two, but yes. they're really not,
because uh-huh.
there's a whole bunch of theories about how djinn work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to both be present at Mount Ararat
mm-hmm.
to sort of end this whole colony of angels, fallen angels.
Yes.
And so they shoot buckshot into the air.
Shaped like eggs.
Shaped like eggs that has little etchings in them.
Mm-hmm.
And they kill that group of djinn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Hale thinks he's killing all the djinn, but then he finds out there's more colonies of djinn all over the world. Yep, so
there's some in China. There's some in, Africa.
But by killing these beings, their souls then... are drift down into this thistle, which makes the thistle become empowered with the ability to heal and to
convey immortality.
There,
pretty simple.
Right. But the djinn don't like right angles, and they have to, which reminds me of a vampire book that we read.
It was the Blindsight.
Yeah. Where it throws them. Yep. So, this guy throws... like he did with the last
mm-hmm.
book, he throws everything in. And he's trying to have the string theory, the universal theory of everything in this book.
It's from a certain point of view, it's kind of amazing to watch him do this. I was equal parts annoyed and fascinated.
Uh-huh.
When the hand wavy sections came in and he's explaining about, you know, how these geometries work and how, you know, he wasn't satisfied to just, you know, make all this stuff up. He had to tie it to actual history. So T.E. Lawrence is involved. T.E. Lawrence's death was an assassination related to this.
The meteor in 18.
Yeah. Some meteor fall in the Saudi desert.
The meteor in Russia too.
And the meteor in Russia was a Tunguska meteor.
I think so.
I don't remember that. Anyway,
there are a lot of meteors.
The Kim Philby's life, and you know, and creating for Kim Philby this half brother who is really the second half of the same person, Andrew Hale.
Solomon. He brings in Solomon.
Yeah,
he
Solomon brings in the story of splitting the child in half. He brings in, the Old Testament, lots of Old Testament stuff, lots of the Arabian Nights. Stories from the Arabian Nights get lots of play.
We got djinn and Nephilim, which are the same thing to him.
Yeah. So a couple things. So first of all, there's no explicit connections made to the last book we read, The Stretch of Her Regard, but it kind of seems like using the same sort of mythology, the same sort of structure of the same mythology of, you know, fallen Nephilim, fallen angels. Exist in a different kind of like a different like
form
like
or like thought like, form
yeah thought form or even like stone form and they're connected to geology in some way
Geology and weather.
And yeah, weather and high and the, places.
Yeah. Which is what we got in...
In the stress of regard, yeah. Right. And then humans are trying to, understand their influence in human history and also then try to break that influence or
control. Or use them, yeah. Yeah.
Just the way that... he takes this crazy story about Nephilim genies and maps it onto the complete history of the 20th century, specifically the Cold War, the rise and fall of Russia.
And the end of the World War II.
Yeah, and the end of World War II. The implication is that once they successfully plant this death seed in Kim Philby, they know that Philby's going to go back to Moscow to live out his days. When he dies... They know that the mother of Russia, that the guardian angel, is going to. What she does is she goes around and she harvests metals from the graves, and they know that she's going to go over to his grave, pull up this little piece of buckshot that contains her death because it was there when all those other genies were killed.
Because it's in the shape of the a genie dies, it has its death becomes a material thing.
Yes, and that this will kill. This will kill the
it's sort of like a seed. It's sort of like when you seed a crystal.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That this would do that, but it would kill the this elemental.
I love how one of the things that Tim Powers does that is actually kind of cool is instead of using stories as a metaphor to help you understand science, he uses science as a metaphor to help you understand his fantasy story.
Yeah.
Does. Which is pretty tricky, but it works.
Yeah, kind of
to a degree. in this room, to a degree.
And in the middle of this is a love story.
Yes, there's a rather affecting love story to me.
It was. I agree with you.
So there's this woman who she's born. In Spain, she sees her family destroyed by the Spanish Civil War. She's recruited by Comintern, the Communist International Organization, and turned into a spy. She is working in Nazi-occupied Paris, and that's where she meets Andrew Hale. They fall in love, and then they like. But he's a double agent. She's working for the communists.
She doesn't know that.
Doesn't know that right away. But they meet a couple of times during the course of this novel,
and they fuck.
Yes, they do. They shag, like a seventies living room. but they and in the end they get together and.
Thrive. Yeah, the very end, they get together
very
in
the
church. There's a promise made. There's a card game, a promise made, a candle lit.
That's right.
A handheld. Walking past the KGB into another world. Mm-hmm. A better world, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Or to take on the other colonies.
A kinder, gentler world. Anyway.
There was like, this book was like 8 books.
It was overstuffed. Yeah. And I think that's what people...
And really, the beginning of the book, a good half, if not more, was just this spy novel.
Yeah.
There's really not much supernatural...
Not for a long
time. Really going on until this creature, this elemental, this djinn, shows up at the gates. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this
happens. Yep. And, it's funny. This book made me want to read some decent like British spy novels. I've never read John le Carré. And I think I'd probably...
You should, because it's like, it kind of picks up all the tropes, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, he's pretty explicit about, that's what he was trying to do. He's trying to do his thing, which is just rewrite history and then do it in a John le Carré style novel.
But I have to tell you, I got just lost in the book. I just got lost.
As did I.
I got, like, fed up. And I kept looking at how many pages were left.
I can see. So you were when you were reading House of Leaves. You're like, let me just get these pages behind me. Get these pages behind me.
That's completely what it was.
Yeah. And then something would grab you, and you would, because your condensation of the novel, while missing some parts here and there, you actually read the book. You remember stuff better, parts of it better than I did.
For sure, I read the book.
Yeah.
But there were things going on. Like, Hale has to look like this other guy. So this other guy dresses like him, and then he gets beat up, and they get doubly beat up. So they both look like they have the same wounds on their body. I mean, it was so convoluted. It was so detailed. He is so detailed.
Yes.
Like, he has to explain every little thing.
Yeah.
Which
it's funny. So is the effect then? I mean, I'm guessing that what he's trying to do is he's trying to give verisimilitude. He's trying to make it seem like this could happen.
Yes. Yeah,
this could actually be true.
Yes.
Which is what I called hand waving.
But it's also what liars do, because liars overly have too much detail.
Yeah.
And that's when you know, like, oh, you're lying, because nobody remembers things in that much detail, right? Really?
Well, you know, he's a liar. He's writing a fiction book.
Tim Powers, you're a liar.
You're a liar. I think I talked last time about the Don DeLillo book where he tries to, write the Kennedy assassination using all of the facts that are available, of which there are very, 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 very many, and then come to a completely different conclusion without contradicting any of them.
Yeah.
So that's in this, even more in this case, in this book, in Declare, than in the other Tim Powers books that we've read. He's absolutely doing that. And he writes about what, he's pretty satisfied with himself. You know, he's doing lots and lots of research, clearly. Reading all these books about Kim Philby, all these books about T. Lawrence, all these books about, Islamic and pre-Islamic Arabian folklore, et cetera.
Yeah.
And trying not to, taking pieces that sort of fit together a little bit. And then
shoving them in.
And then, building these castles in the air out of them.
You know what it reminds me of? This might not be this book is monumental in its scope.
Yes.
But it kind of reminds me of two things. It's like when people do like a cabaret of contemporary songs, mm-hmm. and so they have to have it's like Mamma Mia. The movie and the play Mamma Mia, you have to like have this little scene, and it's sort of like saying, that leads into the song. It gets like shoved in there. You have like force a, did you use an SOS pad? And when you hear me die, can you hear? Like, you have to like make it fit.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, sort of like pre-Showboat or pre-Oklahoma Broadway musicals.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's what this kind of reminded me of a little bit.
Actually, that kind of makes a degree of sense to me.
Does. Thank you.
Did you use an SOS pad? Oh my God. All right. I just saw the preview for the sequel to Mamma Mia.
I know.
And
it's the same show. It's the same. There's only so many Abbasons.
And instead of calling it Mamma Mia 2, they're calling it Mamma Mia Here We Go Again.
Oh, Lord.
Which is actually perfect. That's probably the best thing about the sequel.
Isn't it? So that's going to be the best thing about the sequel.
Anyway, are you like burned out on Tim Powers?
I completely am.
Can you not do this?
I don't want to read another Tim Powers.
This next one is not that long.
How long was this book really?
I don't know. It was an audio book.
Because I had it on my iPad mini, and it was 1,377 pages.
Yeah, I think it's like I listened to it in audio, and it was 28 hours. Was it that long?
That's long. That's like War and Peace long.
I think it was 19 or 20 hours, and that's probably a 600-page book.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was quite long.
Was there any moments that held a terror? And I could tell you what mine were, and then you could tell me what your were.
All right, let me just think for a second here.
Or horror or fear. So let me tell you what mine was,
yeah,
what you're thinking.
Do. Yeah.
It wasn't in the it wasn't when anything supernatural was happening.
Really?
No, it was when they were in the spy novel part where he's figuring out that the code books are fucked up and they have to run.
Yes.
And you're like, and they're leaping over rooftops, yeah. That was like, yeah, on the edge.
I have to say, that was my favorite part of the book.
Mine too.
I was in Paris for a week many, many years ago, and it was right freaking there.
Okay.
And so I could sort of see it. I could see where they were.
Okay, that's cool.
I was on those islands. I know where they were, and I know what they're talking about. And that was strictly purely for me. I was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, Paris, you know, that part of Paris during the war. Very exciting.
Yes. That part gave me, you know, I was on the edge of my seat.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
But was I ever really scared? No. Was I ever grossed out? No.
I was a little.
Were you grossed out with the bodies and the?
Yeah, there were scenes when all those bodies were being consumed, which was pretty squick. But yeah. But you know, I'm pretty jaded.
You are jaded.
So very jaded.
I had trouble conceptualizing what was happening with the genies and the air. I mean, I had kind of a mental image of sort of these. Almost like, you know, where my mind went was Attack on Titan. Those giant, really? Those giant figures that kind of look like people,
sure,
but more like glowy and like it. Swirly and,
yeah.
You know, but really huge,
yeah,
and
yeah,
eating people. But that's how I,
sure,
yeah,
sure. I have my image was poisoned by the cover image of the book that I had.
Oh, I didn't see the cover image.
Yeah, the one that I had was actually from the Italian edition.
Oh,
but it was a picture of, you know, of Andrew Hale in front of the Brandenburg Gate, and then in the sky behind him there's these figures, like huge, you know, like 200 feet
yeah,
tall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's, you know, with his holding his ankh and his gun. And it was pretty close. I think it was the Italian translation.
Okay.
The Clara. Anyway.
Do you think this was horror? I don't think it was horror.
No.
I don't think Tim Powers is horror.
I don't think he is. I don't think he does either.
I think he's a different genre.
Yeah, he's not science fiction. He's sort of like historical fantasy.
Yes.
But he does.
Is it called Slipstream?
Yeah, Slipstream is good. Yeah, I think they call it that. Yeah, historical fantasy.
I mean, like, if we're going to, you know,
yeah,
categorize him.
Yeah, when you think of like historical fantasy, people probably most think about, you know, knights and ladies, but then throwing some wizards. But what he does is he takes real history and he jams fantasy in there. And I like that. I think that's really cool. I'm glad that he does it.
I mean, I like hard-boiled detective novels that are set in, like, urban fairies. I mean, I enjoy those books,
yeah,
where there's, like, the Vampire Papers, where, you know, he's a vampire, but he's a detective.
Sure, sure.
Vampire detective.
If you will.
It's me, vampire detective. Have blood will travel.
Have blood will travel.
So, I mean, I think he's in that ilk, you know?
Yeah.
There is a tedium that my brain does not function in that,
yeah,
realm. But I think some nerdy geek who, mm-hmm, is like into like just the minutiae of things would just cream their drawers reading this book.
I agree. Especially somebody who's into so, you know,
that might be any of you one reader. I don't know. One listener.
Yeah, the perfect reader is somebody out there who has paid attention to Cold War history, has read her John le Carré and, you know, T. E. Lawrence, and then also just really loves the Arabian Nights.
Mm-hmm.
This would be like just the best freaking book.
Yep, I agree.
This book is it's slightly beyond my grasp. Because once in a while, especially when he starts explaining, trying to get scientific on something that's inherently not, my mind just goes blank. I just, I'm listening to the words, and I'm like, okay, right. we're gonna get to some plot here. He's gonna do something, and I never have to wait long. He doesn't make unreasonable demands of me as a reader. But I am glad I listened to this rather than read it, because it would have taken me twice as long, three times as long.
It was a chore. When I read War and Peace, somebody sat down and wrote out,
here's your degree,
all the characters and who was related to who. And it was a huge thing. Mm-hmm. It was a huge piece of paper with a lot. Uh-huh. And I feel like he throws in so many people. There are so many people that populate his novels. Yes. It's hard to remember who's what. And then somebody dies, and you're like, oh, am I supposed to feel bad? That person's dead. And what? And I also don't like the way he talked about homosexuals, but he throws that in there. And
yes.
I didn't appreciate that.
Somewhat problematic. But, it's not Tim Powers writing, talking about homosexuals. It's one of his characters.
Right.
I think part of the game that he's playing, he is leaving special treats for people who actually know this history. Right.
There's like, it's so full of Easter eggs.
Yeah, I think. It's chock full of Easter eggs. Exactly. So once I like cued into the fact that some of these people were real, I did a little bit of reading about them. So when they explained certain aspects of their life, how does he end up in Moscow, how does he get caught and things like that, speaking about Philby, it was enjoyable to me to see how he twists that and how he makes it a supernatural reason for things that happen, probably for perfectly mundane or spy
for reasons. Sure. So
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, you're a nerd.
I don't think anybody who is talking or listening is exempt from being called a nerd.
This is true. What I would like to see Tim Powers do is take Juliet Child's life history and her spy work and turn that into a supernatural slipstream. Then I would completely nerd out on that.
That would be fantastic.
Somebody needs to do that.
In like 50 years, some future writer in the Tim Powers vein is going to do a supernatural history of the relationship of Bill and Hillary Clinton. And it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Somebody should do that too.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of stuff you can do there.
Ooh, all of it.
All of it. Maybe Tim Powers. Tim Powers can do it right now. Maybe he's already doing
it. Maybe he's working on it right now.
Well, because I know that certain...
They'll work in 9/11.
They'll work everything in. They'll work Whitewater in. They'll work the Rhodes Scholarship in. They'll work Hope, Arkansas in. They'll work the whole Rodham clan in.
For sure.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton, Vampire Hunter.
Yes, there you go. Oh, shit, that just writes itself.
Should we have a drink?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do the cocktail time of the cocktail. Yeah, it's cocktail time.
Here we are. Well,
tell me what I've been drinking this whole time, because you've been keeping it a secret. I've been drinking it, and it's gone.
It's gone. It's all gone. All right, I'm just going to tell you the name of it, and I'll tell you how to make it.
All right, very good.
It's called Spirits of the Air.
Oh.
Right. So it's sort of a cross between, there's a classic drinks called the Airmail,
uh-huh.
and there's another one called... what's it called now?
Spirit Gum.
There's Airmail, and there's another one, the Aviator.
Okay. I've had an Aviator.
Yeah, so this is sort of a mix.
They're awful. Aviators are awful.
Well, this is much better.
Well, this was good, so this I'm wondering what's different.
So, what you do, in a cocktail shaker, get yourself a shot of British gin. Nothing fancy, nothing too herbal. Like Boodles or Beefeaters or Gilby's or something like that. Lots of gin in this book.
I love gin. So. Yeah.
I think, in fact, there's so much gin in this book, I think that Tim Powers is actually having a lot of fun by spelling D-G-I-N-N and then G-I-N.
Yeah.
As many times as he can.
Right.
Anyway, a shot of British gin, then a half shot of apple juice, not cider, just like apple juice.
Yeah.
And then a half shot of lemon juice, fresh squeezed.
Mm-hmm.
And then a quarter shot of orgeat, which is like an almond syrup.
Yep.
Shaked it up with ice, strained into a cocktail glass.
Yeah.
I mean, into a...
This was so much better than an aviator.
Yeah, into a coupe glass, one of those ones, like a cocktail glass with the like, you'll sell flat
champagne. The ones
glass.
That you like.
Yeah. And then there's should be a little room on the top there, so float some Prosecco on top, and a dash of Angostura bitters, and garnish with a mint leaf.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, super tasty. The spirits of the air.
Spirits of the air.
All right.
Chin chin.
All right.
Well, let's go down to the basement and argue.
Okay.
And we're down in the basement.
All right. I want to read this next Tim Powers.
Oh, damn you. Damn you to hell. Really, is it not long? I just, oh, my Lord. You know, I'm reading this in Middlemarch, and I'm hating Middlemarch so much. Like,
really?
There's nothing I'm reading that I'm enjoying is the thing.
You got to read one of your YA novels.
I have some on order. I'm waiting.
Your Pixie Detectives.
I do need that, but there's only so much time.
I
picked up the new Kim Dracula Cha-Cha-Cha.
Oh, Kim Newman.
Kim Newman, to pick up the new one at the library, and it's sitting in my book bag somewhere, and I don't think I'm going to get a chance to read it.
Is that the one with Godzilla?
I don't know what it is. It's an Anno Dracula.
Yeah, no, he's got a fourth one out now. I haven't read the third one. He's got a fourth and a fifth one out. He's got one set in Hollywood, which I didn't read.
Yeah, I read that one.
You read that one. Okay.
Yeah, A La Carte.
Yeah, A La Carte. And then there's a new one, like Monster something.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Yeah. Maybe that's the one.
That has like Japanese stuff in it.
Oh, no, it might be the one after that then.
Wow. Busy guy.
Dracula, cha cha cha.
Anyway,
what's this new Tim Powers book that we're reading?
It's called 3 Days to Never.
And how many pages is it?
Looks like it's about 200-250.
Seriously?
I think so. I can look it up, but it's not. I mean, it's not a doorstop. It's like this.
Okay, he's pointing to a very small book that
a shorter book.
One might say it looks like a Hazelden daily. Meditations seismic.
That's right. That's right. all about working the steps.
Yes. Okay.
One more. You can do it.
Oh, dear God.
I've had two books going at all times lately. I have an audiobook and a.
I know, but I've been having a lot of sex lately. I don't have time for this.
Well, good for you. Good for you.
Okay. I've been trolling. It's been my hobby the last few weeks.
I am but trolling.
Can you say the title of the book again?
It is 3 Days to Never by Tim Powers, the third and final Tim Powers book of this sequence.
All right. What were you thinking of doing next time?
I have ideas.
All right. Very good. I count on you for that. So
yeah.
All right, Tim Powers, 3 Days Till Never.
Yep. Out we go.
Off we go. Out of the basement. Rally basement, one of us has a heavy heart.
And it's not
the other one is gleeful.
Gleeful. So anything else about Declare?
Was Declare a real thing? Is that why he used it? Because I was like, this is dumb.
No. I mean, I think Declare, because you don't really know what Declare is.
I do declare.
Until the very end. Although he has some games with that, because there's that poker game where you have to declare high or low.
I think that's completely why he used that name. He just wanted to wedge that in there, and there's always like,
it's possible.
We are going to gamble for her,
it's
my lady love.
It is entirely possible. But Declare was the mission to kill Russia's guardian angel and Soviet the rise of communism, correct. Soviet communism.
Yeah. No, I have nothing else to say.
Yeah. Been reading anything else good lately besides Middlemarch, which you clearly love?
No.
I just read. I have to recommend this book because it's so crazy and it's so unlikely that people who are listening will read it. But I read this biography of Ayn Rand
recently. Lord, what's that one called?
It's called the Passion of No, not the Passion of Ayn Rand. It's called Ayn Rand and the World She Made. Ayn Rand and the World She Made, and it's an unauthorized biography by a journalist who I think she writes for the Wall Street Journal. So she's a financial journalist and not particularly conservative or liberal. So she tries to give a balanced story. But that story of that woman's life was fascinating.
Yeah, she was a character.
Absolutely fascinating.
She really was.
It was probably the book I enjoyed reading most in the last bunch of months.
Maybe Tim Powers can take that life story.
Oh, I bet you there's some story there. So I recommend it. That was sort of the completion of my project that I set myself years ago to, because I find her philosophy abhorrent. But I found it, but now I can find it abhorrent having actually read her books.
Yeah, I mean, her philosophy comes out of her life story.
It really does.
Right?
It really
does. It's really her pushback on the idea of communism and totalitarianism.
Yeah, goosed by her pretty serious psychopathy.
For sure. Yeah. She had a personality disorder.
Yeah.
Major.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And a heavy
smoker. And just the craziness of her relationship with her protege.
Oh yeah,
which was nuts.
It was megalomaniac.
Yeah, it was just nuts, and it was. Maniacal. I mean, it wasn't nuts the way it started, nor was it nuts the way it ended. But it was nuts to have it both the way it started and the way it ended,
and a little bit of nuts in the middle. It was always fun.
Yeah, fantastic. So I recommend that was a good book.
All right. Well, I just saw Get Out, and it was really good.
Wasn't that a good movie?
It's a good movie.
So did you when you finish it, did you like go back and start rethinking about the scenes? And you're like, oh, like when the cop pulls him over, she's not so concerned about a white cop hassling a black man. She's concerned that if the cop runs his number,
he'll have a record of where he was.
And scene after scene like that, it was just
I kind of figured that early on with her, but I wasn't sure how she was.
Yeah, I knew there was a turn somewhere in the middle of the story, but
yeah. So that's all I got.
Well,
so what are we gonna want to do with this thing?
Well, I think we should take it to the top of Mount Ararat.
Yeah. Okay.
And shoot it full of egg-shaped buckshot.
And let it die its own natural way.
Exactly, along with the Soviet Union.
Very good.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Those are done.